This is episode number 21 with Barry Falcon. Welcome to the Path to Freedom podcast. I'm your host, Wes Barefoot, where it's my mission to help aspiring entrepreneurs and existing business owners take control of their lives and create freedom for themselves through business ownership. Each episode, I'll be exploring the strategies and tactics of other successful entrepreneurs that have created freedom in their own lives while sharing what I'm learning along my own path to freedom. I'm glad you're here. Let's drop in. My guest today is a very interesting gentleman, Barry Falcon. So Barry's someone that I've gotten to know over the last several years and wanted to have him on the podcast because he brings a wealth of knowledge when it comes to franchising. Barry's been a franchisee himself. Barry's worked with several franchisors and helped build them to the point of being acquired. He's worked in C-level positions as a franchisor, and now Barry serves as a senior advisor with iFranchise Group, where he works with companies that are interested in franchising their business, helps them figure out if their business is ready to be franchised, and if it is, helps them put all the correct processes in place so that they can franchise their business the right way. So Barry brings a lot of tremendous insight into this conversation today about what someone should be looking for as they investigate various franchise opportunities. I think you'll all enjoy hearing from Barry in this episode. He even talks a little bit about his newfound interest in pickleball. So with that, let's go ahead and drop in to this week's episode with Barry Falcon. Barry Falcon, welcome to the Path to Freedom podcast, sir. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Happy to be here, Wes.
Well, I'm happy to have you. This is something I've been looking forward to for a while. And I got to mention this because we were talking offline before we started recording. So you were sharing a little bit with me about a new activity that you've gotten into here recently, pickleball.
Yep. I played racket sports my whole life, racquetball, ping pong, tennis. And I moved into an old age home called Active 55 and over, and pickleball is a big deal. So got some lessons, and now I'm playing 3, 4, 5 times a week and loving it and improving my skills.
I love it. I love it. That's something I've been wanting to try for a while. So you've given me a little bit of inspiration already to go out and find somewhere I can play pickleball here in my area.
Yeah, it's a fun game, and you get a good workout playing for a couple hours.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. So, well, that's cool. I just wanted to mention that quickly. But, again, really appreciate you joining me on the podcast today. I got to know you, I guess, first probably 3 or so years ago after I joined Shelf Genie, working in the home office doing franchise development. But you're someone that's been around franchising for a very long time. And that's, really a big part of why I wanted to have you on the podcast, to just share some of your knowledge. So, for those that may not be familiar with you listening into the podcast, maybe just start off by sharing a little bit of your story, how you got into franchising in the first place, and, kind of bring us up to date and what you're currently working on.
Sure. Well, the abbreviated version, Wes, is I grew up in New York City, went to Los Angeles on a vacation, and never went home. So said, why should I live in New York when I can live at the beach in Santa Monica? So I ended up in Los Angeles, and got married out there and started working at a company at the ripe old age of 20, and spent 21 years in that company, and that company moved me to Atlanta. So I ran a manufacturing facility, about 175 people doing about $90 million a year, and I did that for 21 years, and then left when they wanted a reorg. I said, time for me to move on. And and then really that started my entrepreneurial career. And so I did some consulting, started some businesses, sold business. And then I bought my first franchise 2003-2004 timeframe. And my daughter was a high school tennis athlete.
Okay.
And competed on USTA tournaments around the country. So wow. Pretty good. Ranked. And So I bought a company called Velocity Sports Performance, figuring she could train there and I loved sports. And so I bought my first franchise then, and I built it up and then sold it 3 years later. And
wow,
that's when I started and founded Shelf Genie.
So how did you have the idea to buy a franchise? Was it more that was a particular business that you wanted to get into and it happened to be a franchise? Or did you kind of set out thinking, hey, I think a franchise business would be a good way for me to kind of get into business ownership?
Yeah, so I didn't really do a lot of research on franchising. What I did is one of my friends, my dear friend is a chiropractor, and he knew the guys at Velocity.
Okay.
And said, oh, you know, your daughter ought to look at train at Velocity. That will help her tennis game. And so I looked at Velocity for her to train at, and then I found out it was a franchise. And I said, okay, this is good. I think I'm going to buy one of these. And so that was my research. I talked to a bunch of franchisees.
Sure.
And I said, okay, this looks like fun. And it's all sports and kids and things like that. So I bought a Velocity in 2003, built it up. And over 3 years, my daughter trained there. And then I sold it.
So it sounds like it must have been a pretty successful venture for you if you were able to sell it just 3 years later.
Yeah, it was, I was okay on the financial side. I didn't get rich enough to retire.
But, right.
You know, it was okay. And I got to learn, and that was really my foray into franchising. So I got to learn a lot about franchising, franchise relations with the franchisor who happened to be in the same city in Atlanta. Mm. And so, that got me involved in the IFA and different franchise events. And so, I turned out okay selling it, but more importantly, met a lot of great people in franchising and learned about the franchise industry, of which I didn't know a lot about.
Yeah, it's interesting how small of a world franchising is once you kind of get into it, and relationships that you made, you know, over that time owning Velocity Sports, I'm sure relationships that you still have today, and
correct,
no telling how many doors, you know, some of those early relationships in franchising have opened for you over the years.
Yeah, what happens is, you know, people that I went to training with, those are the people that you always remember, right?
Sure.
So, you know, a handful of my 2-week training class, those franchisees, we've all sold since then, but we're still friends. We keep in touch. You know, a guy in Louisville, a guy in Los Angeles, one guy in Greensboro, North Carolina. So those people, it's 16 years later and we're still friends.
Yeah, I was part of I'm part of a organization of franchise consultants called Franchoice, and they did a virtual conference just last week, and we ended up in a bunch of different small group sessions with different kind of roundtable topics to discuss. And one of the topics was just for everyone in the group to kind of go around and tell their story of how they got involved in franchising. And for pretty much everyone, and I also just know this from, you know, years of being in franchising and meeting people, pretty much everyone fell backwards into it somehow or another. There were really not anyone that shared their story that they kind of intentionally got into franchising, but once people get into it, they tend to stay because it is a small, tight-knit community full of, you know, amazing entrepreneurial-minded people, and you can just build some very solid relationships, and there's no telling, you know, where those relationships will take you, who else you'll get to meet, and what doors they'll open for you. So it's something that I'm kind of fascinated with, is just hearing how different people involved in franchising initially got into it.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's one is that got me started. Then I invested in a restaurant concept in Atlanta as well. So then I started to learn about franchising. And before that, I had no clue that all these things were franchises.
Sure.
And what they were. And so now I've been in franchising for about 18, 19 years. And so it's been a rewarding career, and I met some great people.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think like you, I know I was the same when I first got really into franchising. And in my mind, it was, you know, restaurants, pretty much fast food restaurants. I'd never really thought about it much beyond that. And then you realize it's way beyond the restaurant sector. Franchising's, you know, in just about every industry across the country. It's fascinating. So you bought and sold this first franchise business. You mentioned you invested in a restaurant concept. But also earlier you mentioned that you were, you know, one of the founders of Shelf Genie. And the audience of this podcast is fairly familiar with Shelf Genie. We've had Andy Pittman, the CEO of Shelf Genie, come on. You know, I've shared quite a bit of my experience.
Sure.
As a Shelf Genie franchisee here on the podcast. But how did you get involved in Shelf Genie, which initially was called Shelf Conversions.
Correct.
And then how did it kind of evolve into a franchise, and what was your role in all of
that? So one is, I was a consultant, and I met through our consulting network, I met a guy named Doug Jensen. Mm-hmm. So he's one of the co-founders of Shelf Genie as well. So yep. I met him. They posted something on the intranet of our consulting group. Mm-hmm. Said they were looking for somebody with franchise experience. So this was 2006. Okay. And I posted a thing back today. I got a franchise. I'm running it right now. We're remotely. I've invested in a franchise. I know a lot about franchising. So Doug was in Birmingham, Alabama. So I met with Doug. I drove to Birmingham, met with Doug, and he explained a little what they had going on, the Shelf Conversions thing up in where Andrew Kerwin had started the company in Richmond, Virginia, mm-hmm. at a corporate location in Chicago. So I met with Doug, and then I flew to Richmond and met with Andrew, and then met with Alan Young, who was consulting for Shelf Conversions at that time. Mm-hmm. And said, okay, I'll look to be a dealer. There was nobody in Atlanta. So Shelf Conversions was a dealer network. So mm-hmm. became a dealer in beginning of 2007, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then we were all talking, said, hey, why don't we put this thing together? They were looking for franchise help. Let's get this going and let's turn it into a franchise. And that's kind of how it kicked off. And they had a small little manufacturing facility in Richmond. I had a strong manufacturing background. And I said, hey, I'll get involved with this company. Let's franchise it. Let's have the office in Atlanta. No use having it in Richmond and no use having it in Birmingham.
Right.
That's what we did. We set up a call center in Atlanta, and we put it together. We got a couple of investors. My nephew happened to be the one that picked the name, because all of our wives were having conversations about what the name should be. So we ultimately hired a branding company to say the URL has to be available. It has to be easy to remember.
Yeah.
Right. It has to, and we have to be able to trademark it. And that's how Shelf Genie came up to board. And I even talked to Barbara Eden of I Dream of Genie at that point to see if she would be a spokesperson, but they wanted way too much money. So we said, we'll do this on our own. As I said, we got a couple of investors. We launched the program, and we started our franchise development in 2007. We hired the iFranchise Group mm-hmm. to help us put all our processes in place, our operations manual, our things like that. And then we launched the franchise business with myself and Andrew and Doug and Alan and some employees. We launched the franchise in 2008, right in the middle of the recession. And
timing, right?
And never look back. 2008 was a good year. 2009 was a good year. And it's been a success. And none of the founders are working the business any longer. Andrew's out doing his own thing. Alan's doing some entrepreneurial things. Doug's doing some consulting, and I'm working with the iFranchise Group. I left Shelf Genie. My role was president and co-founder in 2013, and I went to be the CEO and investor in a company called Concrete Craft, and yep. another franchise. And we grew that, cleaned it up, and 3 years later, turned around and sold it to Home Franchise Concepts.
Yeah.
And I exited out, and I've been with the iFranchise Group for the last 5.5 years.
Well, and I want to get into, iFranchise Group and kind of what they do, and definitely pick your brain in terms of just some of your experience working with iFranchise Group. Before we do that, though, and I'll mention Concrete Craft, I'm pretty familiar with that brand, fantastic business model. And so you kind of have a track record of coming into these early stage companies. And in the case of Shelf Conversions, now Shelf Genie was not yet a franchise when you joined. They were using a dealership model right. with Concrete Craft. I believe they were already a franchise when you got involved, but still pretty early stage. So, what are some of the things that you look at in an early stage franchise business or a business that's not yet franchising but wants to franchise? What are some of the biggest things that you've seen that, companies need to maybe change about their business model or implement so that they're poised to successfully franchise the business?
Right. So with, that's good. Good point. So with any of our prospects that want a franchise, so to speak, there's three major requirements for any franchise business. And one of them is, will people buy the product or service? Is there a market opportunity for it, right? So that's number one. And usually, you know, if you're open a couple of months at least, or 6 months, and you have a track record of improving revenue, then people are buying the product or service. The other thing is, it duplicatable. So it can't just be the founder that has some great skill, but no one else can do it. You know, no one else can do it. So it has to be duplicatable or replicatable. That's for sure. That's number two. And number three is, I'm big on honing on this one, is that's the financial model, right? I don't know any franchises that are nonprofit or 501c3. So everybody's looking to make money. And so the franchise concept, the franchisee needs to make money. They need to get a return on their investment, whatever that investment is. If the investment is $25,000, $50,000, or $2 million, they need to get a good return on their investment, or why do this, right? Even if they're just buying themselves a job, they need to get a return on investment. So those three things, product or service needs to be, people want to buy it, needs to be duplicatable, and the financial model has to work for the franchisee. The franchisor will make money. The franchisee has to make money on an ongoing basis, and that is absolutely key regardless of what it is.
Yeah, those are good points. And I guess it's a good time to go ahead and segue a little bit into iFranchise Group, because that's exactly what iFranchise Group does. And you're a senior advisor there with the company. So you're really looking at companies that have an interest in franchising. You're doing a deep dive into their business and really first and foremost determining, is their business franchisable? And then if you determine it is, then you're really working with the founders of the company to set the business up appropriately so that they can go out and franchise it. That's everything from the legal documentation that's required, but it's also the systems, the processes, making sure they've got the right support mechanisms in place for the franchisees. So tell us a little bit more about, you know, number one, how did you get into working with iFranchise Group? And, and you know, what, as an organization, what are all of the different areas that iFranchise Group can help kind of an emerging franchise concept with?
Right. So one is, I hired iFranchise Group back in 2007. So I got to look at tons of franchise consulting companies, and I chose the iFranchise Group to launch Shelf Genie. So they helped us with everything. And so over the years, it's all about relationships. So, you know, we had some acquisitions we were looking at. We hired iFranchise Group to, you know, look at some companies for us overseas, and that we looked at an acquisition. So ultimately, when I sold Concrete Craft and I transitioned out, I was just networking, and the guys at iFranchise Group asked me what I was going to do next. And I said, I'm going to go run another franchise company. I know how to build companies, and that's what I'm going to do. I'll find one. And they said, why don't you come work for us? You've been a franchisee. You've been a franchisor. You sold a franchisor. You're a certified franchise executive. You can help a lot of our clients. So I said, like, great, let's talk. So Mark Siebert and Dave Hood are the owners of the iFranchise Group. Those guys are absolutely fantastic guys to work with.
Yep.
I think we have 29 people on staff at the iFranchise Group. Office is based in Chicago. And so I just I started working with them and you know, helping prospects, and then also doing strategic planning with a lot of our clients. So we have eight senior people on the team that do strategic planning. I'm one of them. But, you know, talking to prospects, so I'm on the business development side with Mark Siebert. And, you know, we'll spend a couple of hours, 2-3 hours with prospects, 4, 5, 6 hours, whatever it takes, to go through their model, discuss what their goals and aspirations are, look at their financials. And this is all complimentary, because we don't want to take on a client that really has no chance of success, right?
Sure.
So we'd rather coach them along the way for 6 months or 8 months. And then when they're ready, we can take them on as a client. So again, those three things that I talked about are paramount. So we'll do webinars with clients, we'll explain things, and then you know, we provide strategic planning, we do financial modeling, we don't draft FDDs and legal documents, we work with the attorneys, but we basically answer all the questions of all the strategic things that go into the franchise agreement. The FDD, we give that to you, the attorney. They draft the legal documents. Mm-hmm. Our team is writing operations manuals and training programs. We have a marketing team that does brochures and websites. We have a team that does franchise sales training for people that want to sell internally and not outsource that.
Right.
And then we also have a digital media company called Top Fire Media that does lead generation. So we're providing everything to franchisees other than legal and technology.
And you're still giving them, you know, kind of a blueprint in some of those areas and connecting them to other providers of those services, you know, that you've got longstanding relationships with. And, you know, to me, this is such a valuable service that iFranchise Group provides. And, you know, in my role now as a franchise consultant, I'm working with people that want to get into business for themselves and are considering, you know, buying a franchise as a way to do that. And so there's a lot of different options out there. I mean, as you know, there's literally thousands upon thousands of different franchise business opportunities today. And not every franchise is created equal, right? And then
That's
on
correct.
Top of that, you know, even the really great franchises out there, what's a good franchise for you may not be a good franchise for me. There's, you know, really a lot of thought that has to go into kind of defining the characteristics of a business that would be best suited for an individual. And so in this process that I go through with people, in some cases, you know, the better options for them may be kind of on what I would consider the emerging end of the spectrum with franchise companies, meaning, you know, it's a great opportunity, but the franchisor has not been around for 10 plus years and doesn't have hundreds of franchisees across the country. It's a little bit less proven. And some of the coaching that I give to candidates I work with around, you know, the pros and cons of an emerging franchise concept, you know, it starts with, in my mind, there's two different types of companies that franchise, right? The first type is the founders of the company realize they have a good business and they get the idea to franchise it, and they go out and they try to franchise it themselves, and they're figuring it out as they go. And in that scenario, that's a lot riskier than the second type of emerging franchisor, which is founders of the company realize they have a good business, they want to franchise it, they realize they may be experts in whatever their business does, but they are not experts in franchising. So they go out and they partner with someone like iFranchise Group that's done this time after time after time and knows exactly what needs to be put in place for a company to successfully franchise their business. And to me, that's a lot less risky when it comes to investing in an emerging franchise concept. Doesn't mean that there's not any risk at all, but it dramatically minimizes the risk because these franchise companies are going about it the right way. You know, that first category, they'll go out, they'll sell some franchises, and then they'll realize, oh shoot, now we gotta train them. Now we gotta support them. We should probably do an operations manual. You know, they're like afterthoughts. Whereas, you know, iFranchise Group is making sure these companies have the groundwork laid before they sell that first franchise.
It's absolutely key. And so, you know, a lot of founders do not want to spend the money to do it right the first time. So in essence, they do spend the money because it takes them a lot longer and they lose opportunity costs and they make mistakes because they haven't done it. And so most of the people on our team are all over 50. And so we have a lot of experience. Everybody's got 15 to 30, 40 years experience. There's no rookie 30-year-old MBAs on our team. They just aren't.
Right? Yep.
Everybody's been in a C-level position at a company. And so when somebody's looking to buy a franchise that you're coaching them on, you're looking at the management team, you're looking at the experience. And even if it's an emerging brand, it's what processes do they have in place? What are their procedures? What's their culture like? And, you know, what's their likelihood of success?
Yep.
And that's, you know, and success has a lot of different meanings to different people. Some franchisors that are clients of ours, if they award, I don't like the word sell, but if they award four or five franchises a year, they're absolutely ecstatic. And then other clients want to award 40 or 50 or they're not happy.
Right.
So different definitions of success and what their aspirations are. In most cases, the franchisors want to grow and then sell to a private equity company.
Yeah. Yeah, that's becoming very prevalent in franchising today, being acquired, and private equity is heavily getting involved in franchising for good reason, I would say. Wes here. You may have noticed there's a franchising theme to this podcast, and that's because franchising has had a massive impact on my life, and it's the very reason I'm walking my own path to freedom. In fact, one of my companies is a franchise consulting company where I work with people to help them understand franchising and determine if it might be a good fit for them. And if it is something they want to explore, then I help them navigate the entire investigative process and ultimately find a franchise business that's a great match for them. You know, the fact of the matter is there are thousands and thousands of franchise businesses out there today. And like anything, there are good ones and there are bad ones. Even out of the many, many great franchise companies, not every one of them would necessarily be a good fit for you. You know, buying a franchise is a huge decision and you don't want to wing it. I've helped many people buy franchise businesses over the years, and my wife and I have bought and owned franchises today, and we plan to keep investing in franchise businesses. I love helping people understand this process and help them find a business that's going to be a great fit for them and help them accomplish their goals and ultimately create that freedom in their life that we're all looking for. The best part of all of this is that my services are free to the people I work with. And while I do love to contribute to charities and other great causes, I'm not a nonprofit. I'm compensated by the franchise companies I work with when I introduce them to someone that ends up becoming one of their franchisees. It's very similar to real estate, but with franchises. I have the privilege of working with hundreds and hundreds of the best franchise companies out there across practically every industry. So I can be absolutely confident that when I recommend someone to look at a franchise company, I'm introducing them to a very credible and proven company with a solid business model and great support. So if you think you might be interested in learning more about franchising and seeing if it might be right for you, I'd love to speak with you. Get in touch with me by email at wes@path2freedom.com, path2frdm.com. And also check out my website at path2freedom.com, spelled the same way, where I've got a ton of resources, both franchise and non-franchise related, that will help you start down your own path to freedom. And of course, subscribe to and follow the podcast for more great advice about business ownership. And if you know anyone else that might be interested in speaking with me, please share this podcast with them. Thanks for listening to my shameless plug. Now let's drop back into the episode. In your opinion and in your experience, what are some of the pros and cons to investing in an emerging franchise brand versus one that's a little more tenured and has been around for longer?
Well, one is usually in an emerging one, the territory that you want's available, yep. Right? So if you're in a saturated market with a certain type product or service, you're not going to have that possibility. So there's also a cachet of dealing with the owners and the founders, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're early on, yes, it's more risky. You have to do your due diligence. The toughest franchise to sell or award is the first one. Yeah. And so some entrepreneur is going to buy a franchise is going to be number one, right? And so, you know, it's risky buying an emerging brand versus buying a McDonald's that's been around, but it's also could have a lot more upside, mm-hmm. Could be a lot more exciting. Plus you get to deal with the founding family, so to speak. So a lot of people like getting involved with companies that are small, and then they have some influence with the owners and founders as they grow versus walking into a mature system. That's okay. But you know, maybe you'll meet the CEO or president at a national conference, but there's going to be a lot of layers of people between you and them. And, you're a number in the organization versus having valuable input in a growing system.
Yeah, that's such a good point and something that I really do try to point out to people because, I mean, there is such a thing as someone that's too entrepreneurial to really probably be a good fit as a franchisee because there are systems and processes that you have to abide by. And some people are just, you know, that entrepreneurial where that's not a good fit for them. But at the same time, someone that's a little more entrepreneurial minded could look at an emerging franchise because great franchise companies, they learn from their franchisees, especially early on in their evolution. They're, you know, their franchisees are the ones out actively running the business, and they bring great ideas and innovation to the system. And so for someone that really is entrepreneurial minded in that way and wants to just be able to, you know, try different things and see what works, an emerging franchise could be a better fit versus one that is more mature. And they've already had time to kind of figure out what works and what doesn't. And there's more stringent, you know, guidelines as to how to go about operating the business. So it kind of comes back to what we talked about earlier, which is, you know, what may be a good franchise for you would not necessarily be a good franchise for me. And that's a lot of what, you know, my process is designed to help people get clear on. And then we can kind of shift our focus to looking at specific companies. But first, we've got to get clear on the characteristics of the business. And I include in that, you know, whether it's a more emerging franchise or something that's a little more mature and proven out.
Yeah, I agree with you. So one is it's their risk tolerance and also their lifestyle, right? Do they want to work retail 7 days a week? Do they want to be open? And so when I bought my Velocity Sports Performance, I had three requirements. No teenage help was one of my requirements because I had three teenagers at home. And I knew that if they got a hot date on Friday night, they were calling up sick.
Sure.
So that was one requirement. The other requirement was no cash. Right. In my world, in my experience, cash makes honest people dishonest. So I wanted a business that was no cash. And the third part of my requirement was the business had to run and operate while I wasn't there.
There you go.
I couldn't be the business. My daughter was competing on the national level playing tennis. I wanted to travel and watch her tournaments. And I didn't want to have to be tied to the business every day. So those were my three requirements, and Velocity met those requirements. And when we started Shelf Genie, those were also similar requirements.
Yep.
Really nothing's done by cash. We set up the technology platform so the business owner could be on vacation and still manage his business. And it's all about hiring designers and installers so the owner or the franchisee could manage the business but not be in the business every day doing it. So the same three principles held true when we started Shelf Genie. And so now when people are looking to buy a franchise, it's a matter of what kind of lifestyle do they want? Sure, everybody wants to make money, but how much are they want to invest and what kind of lifestyle do they want, right? It's very, very important.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, that's one of the first things I really try to talk with people about is, you know, how do you see your role as the franchise owner playing out? Because, you know, a lot of people that I work with, they want to start by focusing on the widget, whatever the product or the service is. And in my experience, that's not always the best place to start. Shelf Genie is a perfect example, right? Most of, especially the very successful franchise owners in Shelf Genie, They had no experience with custom pull-out shelving before they got in the business. A lot of them are not even handy. Like, they couldn't go install the shelving if their life depended on it. But the business made sense for them because of the model, because of these characteristics that you just explained. It was an opportunity for them to build a business that works for them, where they can work on the business and not in it. And kind of on that note, though, there's a lot of different models in franchising in terms of what the role of the owner is. There are plenty of franchises out there that are more of that owner-operator model. I think you used the term earlier, buy yourself a job. There are some franchises out there that's really how the business is designed. The franchise owner kind of wears all of the hats. The franchisee is the business. And for many people, that's a great fit, right? Because it gets them out of, you know, corporate America, working for someone else, puts them in a position where they are working for themselves. But at the same time, there's a lot of people that might not be attractive to. They want to build a business that works for them and something that's a little more scalable. So, you know, I just come back to that's kind of step one when I'm working with someone is let's really get clear on how you see your role as the owner. Let's find something that plays to your strengths and your skill set, something that's going to give you the ability to live the type of lifestyle that you want to live. Obviously, the financials have to make sense. You have to see a clear path to a strong ROI. But in addition to that, there's a lot of other things to take into consideration. And I try to get clear on all of that before we ever even start talking about widgets or specific businesses.
Yeah, it's absolutely key. And so it appears that, you know, the higher the investment, the more hands-off the owner is going to be.
Yeah.
Right? So when somebody's buying a job, or, you know, they just buy a business and it's them driving in a truck and doing the work,
yep,
that's fine. And as you mentioned, it doesn't scale. They can make a very, very good living,
mm-hmm,
but they can't get really, really rich because it doesn't scale. And so you go on vacation, you don't make any money, right?
Yep.
And so there's no backfill. It's almost like a doctor or a chiropractor that has a single sole proprietorship.
Sure.
They're not in the office. There's no billable hours, right? And so when people buy low cost franchises, it's a matter of, can they scale it, or are they the business?
That's
when
right.
When people buy a franchise that's a couple of million to get into, in most cases, they are not working in the operation. They're normally high net worth individuals, multi-unit owners, and they have a management team in place, and they're doing it strictly as an investment.
Yep. No, it's a good point. And I think that is kind of a good general rule of thumb. The higher the investment, the less hands-on the franchise owner is likely to be. Yet there's some, you know, nuggets out there. And I would kind of throw Shelf Genie into this category where, you know, Shelf Genie is relatively inexpensive to get into compared to many of the options out there, but the model's designed to scale. Now, some franchisees have had more success scaling than others. A lot of it comes down to how well the franchise owner can execute the model. But, you know, Shelf Genie, if done the right way, is very, very scalable. And as you mentioned earlier, a lot of the systems and processes and tools that were implemented early on in Shelf Genie were designed to really allow the franchise owner to manage their business from anywhere. And Shelf Genie is just one example, you know, of quite a few that kind of meet that criteria. And again, that's where, you know, someone like myself is in a position to help someone that's looking for some guidance to find, you know, a great franchise business for them. But I rely on making sure that if I'm going to introduce someone to a franchise company, they've got all the right systems and processes in place. And to me, you know, one of the things I look at when I'm kind of vetting a company is, you know, how did they get started, right? And if they've worked with a company like iFranchise Group, to me, that's a huge plus versus they've kind of just tried to go out and figure it out on their own. So on that note, I'm curious, you know, to get a sense, you know, from your perspective, because as you mentioned, you do business development for iFranchise Group. So you talk to a lot of prospects, a lot of people that are interested in franchising their business. Do you have a sense of like how many of these prospects that you talk to are actually a good fit to franchise their business? I mean, how many people are you kind of going through this initial due diligence with and then coming back to and saying, you know, we don't think you're ready to franchise your business, or maybe we don't even think your business is franchisable at all?
Well, you know, there's definitely a percentage of those, and, you know, maybe 15, 20% of people that say, hey, I want to franchise this. And we say, hold on a second. Let's look at your numbers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's say, here's a good example. Somebody has three restaurants. They're losing money in every restaurant every month, but they want to franchise.
Yeah.
And so that's not really a good model unless you get your food costs down and your labor costs down, right? So that doesn't necessarily work. And other people, again, you know, they're fearful to franchise, right? They say they got a really good business model, but to franchise your business is going to cost you $100,000 or maybe more, right? And, you know, kind of a range of 75 to 125, depending. And so they're fearful, right? Mm-hmm. It's a big check to write, even though there's payment plans and things like that. And I always counsel them and say, you know, you have a good business model. It meets the three requirements. You've had it, you know, for a certain amount of time. You're making money. And then my big thing is, you know, what's the worst thing that could happen, right?
Yeah.
And so we go through that process. And so, you know, I always tell every person this. What's the worst thing that could happen? And so I tell them this. There's best case that you're going to hit a home run. You're going to be the next thing where people are lining up to buy.
Yep.
There's the worst case, which you lose all your money. Right? You don't get COVID or coronavirus. You don't get cancer. You don't die. You just lose your money.
Yep.
I'm not saying that's good, but you lose your money and you rebound. And reality is someplace in the middle. So you have best case, worst case, and reality, right? So someplace in the middle is probably where you're going to fall, right? And so there are some people that lose their money because they don't follow instructions.
Yeah.
And whether it's a franchisee or a franchisor, they don't, you know, they don't follow. They're changing the business model every other week. It's a new idea. They're too entrepreneurial, so they're changing everything all the time, and they yep. can't drive down the, you know, the path. And then, you know, but normally they'll, if they have a corporate location or a company owned store and they're making money, once they franchise, they sell 3 or 4 franchises, they have their investment back.
Yep.
And so if they do some organic growth, or even if they, you know, they do advertising, they're going to get a return on their investment from a franchisor relatively quick.
Yep.
And then they're going to start getting royalties. And so if you sell 2 or 3 and the money keeps coming in, then the money keeps coming in. Even if it's a small amount, it's still additional cash flow. So no different than the franchisee getting a return on investment. The franchisor has to get a return on investment, right? And so, you know, most people, in my 5 years, I've only had one client go all the way to the end, paid my franchise group a bunch of money, and then said, I'm not going to franchise.
Oh, wow.
I'm happy with my corporate location. This was a great experience, Barry. I was doing the strategic planning with him. I don't want to work that hard. I don't want to deal with all these franchisees. I'm making enough money right now and my lifestyle. I thought I wanted to do this. Now that you educated me on the process, I don't want to do it. Thank you very much. And have a great day. And so we keep in touch, but they decided at the end that I don't want all these legal things. I don't want to deal with franchisees. I just want to have my little business, make my money. And I thought I wanted all that. I don't. That's not the norm, but it does happen. So that
sure.
the person didn't lose money. They bought an education mm-hmm. and they decided to do something else. So that's okay also.
Well, and better for them to figure it out then before they had 3 or 4 franchisees and then realized, all right, I really don't want to, you know, do this whole franchise thing. And then you've got a couple of franchisees that are kind of left out to dry.
That's correct.
So great that they figured it out then. And I mean, you bring up an interesting point. It's a lot of work to franchise a business and to do it the right way. And so I would imagine that's a lot of the coaching that iFranchise Group is giving is, you know, hey, we just want to make sure you have a realistic idea of what this is going to take to do it the right way. And you know what you're signing up for.
Yeah. The one is to franchise your business. It's normally 4 to 5 month process from start to finish until you're registered in some of the registration states. And that's
right.
kind of moving things along. But we have a mentoring program that goes on for a year. And the first year is when the franchisee, the franchisor needs you the most because he's never done this before, right?
Right.
And so it's the first time. So they need somebody to call to talk to for advice. And what should I do with this? This franchisee wants a wheel and deal on the franchise agreement. Should I do this or should I not do this? And so they need somebody to turn to. And so, you know, if we're there for them for a full year being their franchise coach, we have a track record and we can help them, you know, kind of get to the goal line and be successful after the first year. And a lot of our clients, you know, take that program because they need the help. Now, people that have been in franchising for many, many years, they said, oh, been there. I just need you guys to write the operation manual, do some financial modeling for me because you guys are really good at that. But I know how to do, our team could do websites and graphics. So, you know, different skill set. If you've been in franchising for 15 years, you still need our services on some things, but not all the services.
Yeah. Maybe not all the coaching that goes into it. Well,
right.
It's nice that you're able to kind of tailor your offering, you know, based on the client and what they need. And it's similar, right? I mean, the way iFranchise Group is helping these companies get their business franchised, but then is also there on kind of an ongoing basis to support them. It's very similar to how a franchisor helps a franchisee, right? They help
Absolutely.
Them get into the business. They give them the blueprint to get open, and then they're there to support them as they go through, you know, the various stages of the learning curve. So very, very similar in that regard. And you know, you mentioned something earlier just about how, you know, a lot of times you're talking to a prospect that might have a great company that would be, you know, perfect for franchising, but there's some fear that's getting in the way. It's the fear of writing that check. And, you know, obviously that's something that anyone that's looking at actually investing in a franchise as a franchisee experiences as well. And it's well beyond franchising, right? I mean, any entrepreneur that's taking some sort of a risk deals with what I call FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. So, you know, in your experience, because no doubt you've experienced this yourself in the various ventures that you've been involved in. And so this is something I always try to weave into these conversations, because I think this type of advice is invaluable for any aspiring entrepreneur. You know, what have you learned over the years, and what advice might you give to someone that's really hesitating to kind of take that first step into to entrepreneurship? And I love what you said about, you know, kind of looking at the spectrum of worst case to best case, and then finding reality somewhere in the middle. I think there's a lot of truth to that, but anything beyond that that you'd,
well,
you'd
give? Yeah, I think the most important thing is, you know, sometimes people buy on emotion, right? Mm. You know, you buy a new house, you love your wife loves the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And so you say, I got to buy this house, and you buy in on emotion, but it doesn't meet your needs. And so buying a franchise, people buy that on emotion as well. And so I think one of the most important things is, can you see yourself waking up every morning and being excited about it? Mm-hmm. I don't personally agree with the adage of, you know, find something you love, you'll never work a day in your life, and it won't be work. I think find a good business model that you could make money. You don't have to love it. You just have to work the business and you'll make money. And so the numbers are really, really important. How much capital do you need? How much capital do you really need to get started, right? Mm-hmm. What's the cash flow? If you have to invest $100,000, how long is it going to take you to get that back after you quit your day job that you're making $100,000, right?
Yep.
So people really need to understand the numbers. And going into buy franchises, some people don't understand the numbers, and they need to do that. And being a franchisor, we have clients that are just so enamored by their brand, but you ask them what's cost of goods sold, and they don't know. And
I know.
So if you're going to be a franchisor, you need to understand what the drivers are of your business. And that can be average sale. That could be, you know, close rate in the home. You know, that could be cost of goods sold. What's the ratio of rent to your sales? It can't be too high. Your food cost, if you're a restaurant, can't be over a certain percentage, or you'll never make money. So every business owner, whether it's a franchisee or franchisor, they really need to understand their numbers. And they got to have a strong CFO or accounting person, but they need to understand the numbers. So when you're doing business, you understand the drivers of what makes it successful or not, right? And so, you know, it's, if you're going to spend $1 million on advertising, that's okay, as long as you get a return on that $1 million. It doesn't matter how much you spend, as long as you get a return. I call it the, you know, marketing and advertising is like an ATM machine. You put in 100, you know, if you get 500 out, you'll keep feeding that ATM machine. If you put in 100, you don't get anything out, you're going to stop putting in the hundreds, right? So you have to understand what the drivers are and measure those things.
Well, I find myself having to coach a lot of people, and this was the case when I was doing development for Shelf Genie, because as you know, Shelf Genie has some minimum requirements for, you know, how much people need to spend on marketing and advertising each month. And that scared a lot of people, but it was really coaching them to understand exactly what you're just saying is your marketing is not an expense, it's an investment. And correct. And you should be able to very accurately see what type of an ROI you're getting from those marketing dollars that you're investing. But, you know, I think overall that advice is great, is, you know, really take the time to understand the numbers, right? Numbers don't lie. And franchising is unique in that, you know, if you're investigating a franchise business, you've got access to a lot of data that you can use to make an educated decision on that business. I mean, franchising is regulated by the FTC. You're going to have some financial performance information for the entire system that you can use to do some modeling. And then in addition to that, you get to go out and talk to the other franchisees that have been out there running the business. You get to validate everything that you're learning through the whole due diligence process and from the franchisor. So there's very few investments out there where you get that type of insight into the investment right. before actually making a decision. So I think your advice of just understand the numbers, follow the numbers, use that to give you confidence to make the decision. And then, you know, there's still going to be some risk, right? You're still going to have to take a leap. And that really comes back to just looking introspectively at yourself and saying, you know, do I have confidence in myself that I can execute the way other successful franchisees in this particular business have also executed? And so I would bring that back to understanding the role of the franchise owner and making sure that you feel confident in your own ability to execute that role.
Yeah, but it has to be the franchisor has to have a good business model. It can't just be the founder or the CEO. And so even at Shelf Genie, you know, when people bought franchises that wanted to buy and we awarded franchises, I always told them, you know, take this franchise because the business model works, not because I'm a cool guy, right? Because I'm not going to be here forever, right?
Sure.
And so don't buy it because it's Barry or Doug or Andrew or Alan. Buy it because the business model works, right? Because we're not going to be here forever. And as soon as we leave, the business has to go on. And it has gone on. So we've been successful. And so other people have to buy a good business. The founder is good and their vision of growing is great, but the business model has to work because it can far outlast them.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a very good point. Well, look, I'm curious to get your thoughts on one other thing and then we'll kind of wrap this up. But in your position, you've got a lot of insight into what types of companies are already franchising, companies that have an interest in franchising. You know, you mentioned COVID-19 earlier. So, you know, obviously we're going through some very uncertain times. From your perspective, what does the landscape of franchising look like going forward? You know, are there any particular types of businesses that you feel are better positioned in kind of this post-COVID, new normal, whatever you want to call it, economic environment?
Sure. So one is, based on my track record of experience in 2008, 2009, a recession, that word mm-hmm. was not in our vocabulary at Shelf Genie. So I predict that with high unemployment rate or higher unemployment rate right now, that 2021 is going to be a banner year for franchises.
Yeah.
People are saying, oh, boy, I'm dispensable. I'm getting laid off. I'm getting mm-hmm. a check. I'm getting a severance package. I want to have control of my own destiny.
Yep.
I think end of 2020 and 2021 is going to be banner years. I think there'll be more franchises sold than ever before. So I just see it much more people being entrepreneurial. You know, what's the greatest thing of sliced bread? You know, you look at, you know, fitness concepts that are still that whole industry of self-improvement is growing, even though you have social distancing and things like that. There's still fitness concepts. There's home healthcare with the baby boomers, right? People want healthcare or services at home. People are enamored with cars, so things with automotive. If you look at basic things, I mean, food's not going away. Everybody has to eat, right? The delivery services are doing fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, whoever just thought up about calling, you know, placing an order online and just driving up and picking it up. If they would have did that 8 months ago, it would have been revolutionary. Now it's just mother is necessity of invention, right? So I go to Target, I go to Kroger, I go to stores, I place my order online, I just drive up and pick it up, or we use Instacart and get it delivered. So convenience, things that help people with convenience. So I just see things growing in the home healthcare business, home services.
Yeah.
People are working from home more, which means they have more time to look around their house and say, oh, I got to get this. I need to upgrade these. And then there's either nice to have or have to haves. The have to haves are always going to be there. I need the plumber. I need the electrician. I need these things done. The nice to haves, you know, I need some new window treatment, so I'm going to do those things. But regardless what it is, I think restaurants will have a little slower growth, mm-hmm. but I think other services like home health care, fitness, automotive are all growing. I mean, I have a client in the swim lesson business, right? And they're called Big Blue Swim School.
I'm familiar. Great business.
They're booming. So I was one of my franchise clients, and I did the strategic planning with them and helped them grow. And you know, they wanted to sell 50 the first year. And I said, yeah, that's okay. It's doable, but it's not that everybody does that. I think they sold over 60 the first year.
Yeah.
And now they're all getting them open. Well, why? You got a great management team and they got great technology running the business, and parents that have kids, they need swim lessons, right?
Yeah.
And so it's, I don't care what the economy is doing. Your kid has to learn to swim and you're going to get a haircut. Usually every month, but if it's every 3 months because of COVID-19, you're still going to get a haircut at some points. Those businesses are still prospering.
Yeah, I think that's great insight. And, you know, one of the things I'm really trying to help the people that I'm working with understand is you've got to be forward-looking with all of this. I mean, it's very easy to get caught up in everything that's happening right now. And for sure, there is quite a bit of uncertainty. But to your point, the one thing that is certain is these, especially, you know, essential needed products and services, they're not going away. What's going to happen, though, is companies are having to pivot and evolve and rethink how they've always done it so that they can continue to meet demand in a way that consumers are comfortable with. And so in my opinion, there's not ever been a better time to look at getting into a franchise, because even under completely normal circumstances, this is not like a 2 or 3 week process, right? To find the franchise and investigate it and, you know, make a decision to move forward and make sure you have all your capital together. You know, this is like a 3 to 4 month process. And even if it's longer than that, that's okay, right? So what someone that's investigating franchises currently gets the insight into now that I don't think they would have had before is they get to see how well is the management team adapting to everything that's happening around them, right? Right. And so this is going to weed out a lot of the companies that are just not as strong, not as nimble and able to pivot. It's going to essentially be survival of the fittest in an economic standpoint. And so as a potential franchise owner, you know, you can kind of look forward and, you know, 3-4 months from now, the companies that are still thriving, that would give me a lot of confidence to know, hey, this is a company I could be a part of, right? Because they've navigated these uncertain times, they've figured out how to pivot, and their businesses are still thriving, even though they may not be thriving in the same way they were a year ago, they're thriving. Yeah. And it's also, I think, a fantastic time, you know, to go through a process like this and talk to franchisees, right? Because what better time to talk to franchisees than when they've just gone through, you know, a crisis like this, and they can give you feedback on, you know, how well their franchisor supported them, or maybe how well their franchisor did not support them. And that's going to be really good insight as well. In addition to that, you know, you mentioned earlier unemployment. I mean, the talent pool is going to be very, very strong compared to what it has been in recent years. Money's readily available. And interest rates are very low. And for any business that does require real estate or brick and mortar, there's some great, you know, deals that you could capitalize on out there right now. So I think to your point, a lot of things are coming together and you will see a huge surge in franchise sales, I think, for the remainder of 2020, but certainly, you know, going into 2021. So I appreciate your insight on that.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
All right. Well, look, I want to just wrap this up with what I call the lightning round. So for every guest that I have come on the podcast, I try to ask the same 4 questions. And it's really for selfish purposes because I love learning from everyone that is gracious enough to join me on the podcast. And I love comparing kind of responses to these same 4 questions. So we'll go ahead and jump into the lightning round now. First Sure. question is, simply, what is the best piece of advice you've ever received? And that could be in business or, you know, just in life in general.
I guess in business, it's know the numbers, right? The best piece Yeah. of advice ever is it's all about understand the balance sheet and the P&L of any business you're going to get involved in. If you're going to invest in a business, understand the numbers. It's absolutely key. You'll learn a lot by doing that.
Great advice. The numbers never lie. All right. Next question then is, do you have any sort of a morning routine, something that you try to do every single day to set yourself up for a successful day? And if so, do you mind sharing that with us?
Yeah, my every morning routine is exercise. I am a laundry generator. So I run marathons to raise money for type 1 diabetes. I ride my bike, do century rides. And as I mentioned, I'm playing pickleball. So I'm 6 to 7 days a week, every day exercising to start the day.
I like that laundry generator. I was just talking with my wife recently. So I just finished a 75-day program. And part one of the components of the 75-day program was two workouts a day, two 45-minute workouts a day, and one of them had to be outside. I was literally doing laundry like twice a week because I was just, you know, churning through workout clothes, you know, soaked in sweat. And but I like that, you know, get some sort of exercise in every morning. I just did a short podcast episode about the value of starting your day by moving your body in some way or another. It helps you feel better physically, but it engages your mind, and there's just so many benefits to it. So I think that's great. What book are you reading right now?
Currently reading a book called Superhuman by Dave Asprey.
Yeah.
And it's all about, how to age backwards as I'm getting older. And I guess the last quadrant of my lifehood, theoretically, I'm doing anything I can to stay healthy and enjoy myself. So that's absolutely critical. So I'm reading Dave's book. It's all about biohacking and eating the right nutritional products and exercising and keeping your mind and body healthy.
I just read that probably 2 months ago. And I've written all of his books, and I drink bulletproof coffee every day.
Uh-huh. Yep.
This is the next one on my list along those lines. It's called Boundless by Ben Greenfield.
Okay.
I bought it not realizing this thing is literally a textbook. This thing's like 8 pounds in my hand. So it's been sitting on my desk. It's a little bit intimidating just because it's so thick. But if you like Dave Asprey and Superhuman, check out Ben Greenfield. He's along the same lines. Superhuman, that was a fascinating read. All right. Final question is, what is your definition of freedom, and are you living it?
My definition of freedom is doing what you want, when you want, with who you want. Mm-hmm. And at this point in my life, I'm absolutely doing it. So there are no negative people in my life because I just don't deal with negativity. So if somebody's high maintenance or negative, I just push them aside. They're done. And so I'm enjoying spending time with my family. I've been married for almost 46 years. Three great kids, and two of them local, one in Chicago. But I'm doing the things I want to do. I work hard and play hard. And so I'm exercising. I'm traveling when the events don't get canceled.
Sure.
And I'm doing the things I want to do. Living an okay home, living a great community. And I'm just living life for the next X amount of years. You never know when the end is. So I'm trying to capitalize on every day.
And you're playing pickleball every morning. It doesn't get better than that.
I'm playing pickleball. I'm running or riding my bike. One of those three activities are generating the laundry, as I talked about, which I get to do regularly. I ride my bike about 4,000 miles a year.
Wow.
So that's a bunch of riding. I rode 170 miles last week. And, it just kind of keeps you in shape, camaraderie, even with social distancing. And, I think it's what I call it's challenging and relaxing at the same time, because you're not thinking about work. You're kind of out in nature. Mm-hmm. Same thing with running a marathon. I'm kind of enjoying myself. I'm not killing myself from speed. And you cross the finish line. It's a lot of self-satisfaction that you're able to do that.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And I love, what you said about, just kind of eliminating negative people from your life, because I think that's a big part of, really just being happy. And I think it's a learned skill to be able to say no, right? To be able to say no to things that, are not going to be the best use of your time, or to simply say no to someone that is not going to inject positivity into your life. I really like that. And I know I've kept you for a while. If you have another minute or two, I'd love to give you the chance to talk a little bit more about some of the causes that I know you're very passionate about raising money for. You mentioned with riding your bike and doing some fundraisers. Do you want to share some of this with us?
Sure, absolutely. So I'm very active in Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation, and that's all about, kids and adults with type 1 diabetes. Mm-hmm. So I'm on the board of directors of the Georgia chapter. My son was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes 18 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Lives a perfectly normal life, just has to have insulin to stay alive, right?
Right, right.
It's a good job, and he exercises and got a girlfriend. And so I'm passionate about raising funds to help find a cure for this disease that does not have a cure. And so you must have insulin to live.
Right.
So part of my give back is to do century rides around the country to raise money, to run marathons. I've run 15 marathons in the last 8 years.
Wow.
Again, to raise money to help find a cure. And so if anybody wants to learn about my story, just go to barryfalcon.com and you'll see all about it.
Excellent. Well, we'll post that in the show notes as well, your website, so that people can get to it. On the bike ride, and have you heard of the Calendar Club?
No.
You might do more miles than this in a month anyways from what you're describing, but the Calendar Club is, you know, you run or bike the number of miles equivalent to the day of the month, right? So if it's the first day of the month, you do one. If it's the 31st day of the month, you do 31, and you progress all the way up accordingly. Jesse Itzler, who's also in Atlanta, he's a big proponent of that, and he's gotten all types of people participating in calendar clubs, and it's something you may want to check out if you're not familiar with it. But anyways, I know that you've done a lot over the years to raise money for a fantastic cause in juvenile diabetes. So I just wanted to take a minute to acknowledge you for that. And we'll definitely post your information in the show notes. Where could people connect with you if they want to have a discussion? Where can people learn more about iFranchise Group?
I mean, iFranchise Group, the website's iFranchiseGroup.com. You'll see our staff, everything about our business. And really easy for me, my email address is barry@barryfalcon.com.
Okay.
So pretty easy to find. And again, my charitable website with my cause is barryfalcon.com.
Beautiful. Well, we will post all that in the show notes so people can connect with you and learn more about you. But Barry, I really appreciate you coming on. And, you know, also just wanted to quickly say thanks. I've learned a lot from you, you know, over my time knowing you, probably more than you even realize. So I really appreciate everything.
My pleasure.
And thanks so much for dropping into the Path to Freedom podcast with us.
You got it. Well, good luck going forward and hope you have a great rest of the year.
Thanks, Barry. Same to you.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks for dropping in with me on this episode of the Path to Freedom podcast. I hope you got a ton of value and learned something new. And if you did, please make sure to subscribe and follow the Path to Freedom podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And also, please share with someone else that may also get value from it. And if you're interested in learning more about how you can take steps to getting into business for yourself, I'd love to speak with you. Connect with me online at pathtofreedom.com. That's path, the number two, FRDM.com, or shoot me an email at wes@pathtofreedom.com, spelled the same way. And if you know anyone else that may be interested in speaking with me, I'd love to meet them. Please forward this podcast along to them and encourage them to reach out. Thanks again for joining me today, and I'll see you next time. Now go drop in.